This is Dr. Will Tuttle, your host for the Worldwide Vegan Summit for Truth and Freedom. You now have the precious opportunity to learn from the deep experience and the inspiring example of Dr. Gabriel Cousins, MD. Dr. Cousins, based in Israel, functions as a holistic physician, homeopath, psychiatrist, family therapist, Ayurvedic practitioner, and a Chinese herbalist. In addition, he is a leading world diabetes researcher, ecological leader, spiritual master, and founder and director of the Tree of Life Foundation. Dr. Cousins is a best-selling author of many books, including There is a Cure for Diabetes, Conscious Eating, Spiritual Nutrition, Creating Peace by Being Peace, Torah as a Guide to Enlightenment, and Depression Free for Life. He's considered one of the leading live food vegan medical doctors, holistic physicians, and experts on spiritual nutrition. He presently has established and supported over 100 health and diabetes prevention programs, organic, veganic, farming projects, and orphanages in 26 countries, and has received the Cesar Chavez Award for his nutritional education of migrant farm workers in the U.S. So I've known Dr. Cousins for many years, and it's a wonderful honor because Dr. Cousins actually is a living legend in many ways, and he's renowned for his capacity to bring spiritual teachings and veganism to many, many people and to embody these teachings with spiritual wisdom and vegan teaching of compassion for all beings. So thank you very much, Dr. Cousins, for joining us.
Well, it's an honor to be with you. I love the work you're doing. It's good. And I give my love to everyone here. What I like to do, which is key to understanding veganism from my point of view, is do a prayer that merges the heavens and the earth. And it's about oneness. And to me, veganism is about eating in a way that brings sacredness to the planet. And certainly no death. Sacredness. So here's the prayer. Vishendikud kudusha brihu. Ushinate, Bilo Ertimu Laihe, Chimuki Bilovke, Beodashlam Shem, Kosreo Kolam, Amen. Now just feel the merging of heart and mind, just for a moment. And now we're ready to talk about veganism, which is a sophisticated merging of heart and mind when you really understand what it's about.
Thank you. I love opportunity that we just had to connect in this way through the spiritual dimension and connecting heaven and earth. And so I want to start with just getting a little bit of your background. I had the opportunity with my wonderful wife, Madeline, to visit Tree of Life Foundation quite a few times over the years. And so I think a lot of people know you as the founder of this wonderful organic vegan healing center. I know that's just one of many projects that you have been undertaking over the years, but I was wondering if you could spend a few minutes. You know, you have an MD from Columbia University. You were an amazing athlete in college and led your, as a middle linebacker, led your team to victory, I think, you know, as a most valuable player and so forth. And
right.
So all these sides, and now even in your young age, I'm not even sure what it is, you're still in tremendous physical condition. I'd love to hear a little bit about that too. So you could just share with us some of the benefits of veganism that you've experienced and how you've been able to share this with the world. I think it would be great to hear a little bit about that.
Okay, so it's a very big question, and it's nice. So my introduction to veganism really began in 1973 when my wife was pregnant, and we both had this nightmare. What was the nightmare? Because the baby was a chicken and we're eating it. I mean, that's quite a nightmare, right? We both had it and became simultaneous vegans. Done. Okay, so it's a funny thing. I'm vegan, right? Okay, then after that, in 1975, I began working. Really, my spiritual path is both Kabbalistic, but also very yogic and also Native American. Those are my three terms. So I was in a deep meditation with Swami Muktananda to receive the awakening energy. And I went into the nothing, and I came down, a little voice rang out and said, you should learn to eat and live in a way that supports spiritual life. Okay, so I'm this doctor. I have thousands of people in the ashram I'm taking care of. And I began to observe what's the diet that's best for spiritual life. And what became very obvious to me was it was a vegan diet, at least 80% my food. Okay, but the truth is a vegan diet's the turning, it's the turning point. It's where the crossover is. And as a person involved with not only spiritual life, but kundalini, I was working with people who may have a kundalini crisis or things, and they would self-medicate by eating meat because the energy was too much for them. And so what I reversed it around and said, okay, obviously the way to enhance your spiritual energy, become a superconductor of the divine, is to go vegan. Wasn't that complicated. If people are using it to suppress it, then great. It's just the opposite. So it was, it's kind of funny that way as it unfolded, but it was very clear. So in the yogic system, we have what's known as nadis, 72,000 channels through which the kundalini or spiritual energy flows. It became very obvious that meat, fish, chicken, and eggs act as a sludge to the kundalini. Therefore, it's antithetical to spiritual life in that way. That's part one. Now, the other part is when we kill an animal, we create pain, misery, fear, death. When you eat it, you're taking that pain, misery, fear, and death into you. Obviously, that's going to block you at all the different levels. And we're not just this physical body. We're, you know, multiple levels, like five levels of soul and five levels, you know, of the body. So you have the astral plane and you have the mental plane. And so the point is every level would be taking in the energy of death. Obviously, that's not most supportive for spiritual life, right? So you got blocking the nadis, the flow of the kundalini, and you're also bringing the energy of death in. So that's just a no starter, you know. This, for spiritual life, this is a vegan diet is clean and clear. That is the best. Best supportive of it. And I'll just say it now, and I'll say it at the end too, is that this is the medicine for the world today, is a vegan diet, because it supports spiritual life, but it supports every other level of our life. So I can say, you asked me about my age, it's 78, okay? Wow. So what happens at 78 on a vegan lifestyle? And I've been doing this for like 46 years. It's not like, so there's a little trial by air, but trial by fire, right? So what happens is at this time, compared to when I was a captain of an undefeated college football team, I could do 70 push-ups. Now I'm on the average doing 1,800 push-ups at one time. I get floated. I can do up to 100 pull-ups. Okay. Although I go at 80, but 100. So the point I'm making is, how did that happen? Well, the vegan diet supports a physiology that actually can help with age, that you go stronger and more flexible. I mean, I couldn't even touch my toes when I was captain of undefeated football team. Now I can sit in full lotus. How did that happen? Well, it didn't happen by accident. So all these things are supported by a diet that is, you know, a vegan diet. But that's really what I'm saying. I mean, there's more to it, right? So I'm doing yoga every day and I'm, you know, doing breathing. I mean, I'm doing things. It's not like I'm not working. But the vegan diet supplies me with the energy to do that, particularly when we understand that food is energy. That's a key concept. And you want it the cleanest you can be. You don't want any death in it. So that's how I'm kind of see it. So that's been the progression. And it gets better in a sense. on this lifestyle, you can, as I say, you get stronger, more flexible, and more endurance. I mean, what can I say? It's like really practical. It isn't like a theory and then you get weak and fatigued. Now, I will tell you that if people don't understand, and I work this out in my books, we all are unique in our physiology. On chromosome 19, there's three loci. It tells you how much meat, how much protein, how much fat, and how much carbohydrate you should have. And if you know how to balance it, which is part of the work I do, okay, because I work with people all over the world. I mean, today somebody from Australia, and then U.S., and then all over the place, Spain. Key is to get the right balance. So we are not a bunch of cows who just eat grass. We are unique in our physiology, chromosome 19. So part of how I get people to be 99% successful on this vegan diet is getting the right combination of carbohydrate, protein, and fat. That's extremely important, and we are unique. So that's part of the work I do. It's like, okay, how we balance it? What's your constitution, or medically, what's your constitution in a variety of different ways? So without getting too technical, okay? So.
What about the importance, you say, of clean food? You're pretty renowned for, also, I think, for organic and veganic, not just the fact that not eating meat, dairy products and eggs, but how they're grown. Can you say a little bit about that? What you've learned?
Oh yeah, it's really important. First, the difference between organic and commercial is very big energy wise. And we've taken Carilion photography. We can clearly see that organic has way more energy per se. Okay. Second thing is we know that organic food was, you know, over up to like 300 studies have shown that organic food has about, on the average, 25 to 30% more nutrients. So it's more nutrient dense. I mean, that's just out there. Third is it's about 60% less in toxic metals. There's no organic food that's really totally clean, okay? Well, you know, but it's way less. And that's the important thing here, okay? Way less cadmium, way less lead, way less mercury. Okay? So that's a big deal. And same thing with pesticides and herbicides. Now, when we eat lower on the food chain, what we know is higher in the food chain, like cow, you know, any flesh food, it has 95 to 96% of the pesticides, herbicides, and toxic chemicals that are in there. So immediately by me, we cut down our exposure by 95%. That's a big deal, okay? Now, the other thing we find with organic is that it has significantly more antioxidants. I mean, 30 to 80% more antioxidants, depending on which antioxidant you're looking at. So, yes, it has 25, 30% more actual nutrient in it. You know, 30 to 80% more antioxidant, depending on the antioxidant you're studying. Has significantly less neurotoxins, pesticides, herbicides. So it's way better for your every aspect of your life. I think, and that's, this is well researched. This is not like, oh, I think organic's better. I'm saying this is the real data, you know, that we have out there. So it's very significant. I eat, what I'm going to say, 100%, 99.99% organic that I have for years because of this evidence. There's no question that that's important. You got vegan, but you have to, the organic is really important.
Right. Yeah. Plus it's not killing all the birds and insects and so forth, like the pesticides.
Well, yeah. Go ahead.
Yeah, and also the thing about maybe are you able to get actual veganic food sometimes without any bone meal or blood meal and that kind of thing? You think is that possible?
Well,
hard, I know, but
in the U.S., our farm was one of five farms that were organic veganic. we used no animal products, no manure, nothing. Okay. And you can do it. And we, part of it is we had this, I think it has like 82 different nutrients, the bacteria in it. And the key to this is activating the soil.
Right.
So we do the double dig, and we're putting in this hyper-activated organisms, and the soil comes alive. The biggest problem with farming, including organic farming, is we're not nurturing the life in the soil. It's a subtlety here, okay? So we clearly lived that way for years. It's where we live now in Israel. Well, there's a really good organic farm that we get our food from. It's like, they have a market, so it's like 3 blocks from where we live. But we visited the farm. You want to visit the farm. And this guy's totally, he's been doing it for 25 years. He's totally Swiss. So he's really precise. And he's totally committed to, the full meaning of organic, versus the kind of other kinds of things that sound organic. So that's how we kind of approach it. We eat a lot of sprouts too. You know, in other words, we're kind of off the grid in that way, if you see what I'm saying. And we've lived this way for years. I've lived this way since, again, 1973.
Right. And you've done a lot of, and helped a lot of people, I think, over the years with cleansing, with fasting and with juicing. And can you say a little bit about that, about the importance of cleansing?
Yeah. I really began fasting in 1982 when I returned from 7 years in India. And I started out with my typical style. I did a 40-day fast. It's not the way. But I began seeing it, wow, this is powerful. This is really good. So we have been since really the late 80s, doing spiritual fasts. There's levels of detox. You have physical detox, emotional detox, mental, and also spiritual detox. So we organize the fast. In fact, I have one in early October, because right now it's hard to people gather together with all the fear. So we do a over-the-internet fast, which we've been doing the last two rounds. And I recommend half diluted green juices. We don't do a lot of sweets because the fructose kind of activates a few different things for people that isn't the best in terms of blood sugars. Okay. In fact, part of my work with the fasting is I use it in healing type 2 diabetes. And we get really, really good results in 3 weeks. 61% of the people are healed, meaning blood sugar less than 100, no medications. And, when they say it's just a downhill course to early death, 10 to 18 years off your life, okay, that's a big turnaround. So fasting is part of it because the other part is it rests the organs and they can regenerate. So it's part of the cleanse, but it's also part kind of a rest is what I would say. Now, it takes about, because I've measured, I'm not just a medical doctor, but I also have published papers in biochemistry and biophysics, okay? So I have a certain way of thinking about things. So I measured people's urine to check the toxins coming out. It takes about 6 days to get the measurable toxins in urine down to about zero. So you do a 1 or 2 day, you call a fast. It's not really fast. You have to move into fasting physiology. And then you're detoxing day 3 or 4. By day 5 and 6, then you start actually have a clear urine. So that's why our minimum fast is 7 days. Because I feel most people are cleared of the toxins by that time. And particularly the bowel toxins. Remember, the bowel toxins affect the brain. So we're looking at a mental clearing going on at the same time. That's why we meditate, and we're doing the yoga. We're doing all these things to support the total approach, as well as group meetings with emotional clearing and so forth like that. So that's kind of how we do the fast. That's why I call it a spiritual fast. The intent is, yeah, you lose weight. I've had people lose 45 pounds, type 2 diabetics, because they stop being insulin resistant. Their blood sugars go to normal, and so their weight also goes to normal. It's nice. But generally, people do lose a certain amount of weight, 7 pounds or 10 pounds, something like that. So it's good that way. But that's a little bit more gross level than I'm talking about. We really work on the emotional, mental, and spiritual levels. We're meditating twice a day. We're having sharing, a little bit deeper in what's going on. So that's fasting. It's huge. We've been, people have been doing fasting for 5,000 years. It's like the only really proven approach to health. So really,
yeah, that's really fantastic. I think it's very exciting to hear the great successes that you've been having with not only an organic, mostly live, whole food plant-based diet, organic, of course, and also fasting and cleansing, not just the physical body, but really healing emotionally and intellectually, psychologically, spiritually. And let me know what you think about this, but I would think that it seems to me, anyway, the last few years, the level of toxic chemicals in the environment seems to be increasing. We have glyphosate now, like, everywhere, pervasive. We used to say to people, well, we would prefer organic food when we come and give a lecture in your city, when you're going to feed everybody. And now we say, listen, it has to be organic.
Which is what I
need. So can you talk about that? With glyphosate and everything, how should people be responding to all this?
Well, at some point, there has to be more of a movement. There isn't a movement where we say, no, we can't start. We have to stop poisoning the planet and stop poisoning all life on the planet. And glyphosates have been associated with leukemia and a variety of, cancers. So, this is dangerous stuff. Everybody is having some in their system because we live on the planet. So to me, there needs to be a move towards organic in general as a way of life. Now, we do know that organic growing is equal to or 10% better, meaning more productive. So we are working towards that and actually in Israel. Some of the people I trained had come to the U.S. now are kind of sharing the organic way, and with the different microorganisms to make the soil come alive. So we're doing on that. And in Cameroon, because I have 5 countries in Cameroon, we have a group called WERES, which is West African Rural Development, okay? And then Cameroon, we have 55 organic vegan firms. 55. I mean, we have 5 in the United States. Think about that. Because people get it. They're close enough to the earth to really get it. Okay. I think that's the important thing. And so we have Nigeria and Cameroon and Ghana and different. But the point I'm making is we are teaching this farming approach, and it is more effective.
Wow.
And it's way healthy. And people, it's not hard to convince people. I don't have an argument about it.
Yeah, that's really good news, because I think the big problem, and I've studied this for many years, is the so-called Green Revolution, which basically was the big oil companies and big chemical companies moving into places like Africa and Asia and bringing Western ways of doing agriculture, of poisoning basically the soil and converting the whole foundation of agriculture from soil to oil, and people getting sick and needing medications, needing vaccinations and all this stuff. And what you're doing is basically connecting people to their indigenous roots of wisdom, of connecting to actually what they already know, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
So it's the way where are we always say, go back to your natural way of living. And that's what it works.
But you're really a revolutionary. Can you say a few words about what I just mentioned? The whole an overemphasis on reliance upon pharmaceutical drugs and vaccinations to be healthy. We're seeing a big push for that right now. That the only way to be healthy now is to get a jab, and anything else isn't going to help. Can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think that's an important issue right now.
Well, I wrote an 80-page chapter out of my book, Conscious Parenting, okay? So it's actually really important. I know people are thinking about COVID, but I'm talking the big picture. So, for example, in Brazil, they did a 5-year study using homeopathic prophylaxis, meaning giving people homeopathic measles and mumps and rubella and so forth. And they compared it to the vaccine approach. Homeopathic prophylaxis, and this was done around the year 2000, like a 5-year study, was 93% effective. Vaccines are 10 to 30%. And they make you sick, and you have lots of side effects, and there are all kinds of problems. So it's 10 to 30% versus 95%. So we actually have something that's really better. In the flu epidemic in 1917, homeopathic prophylaxis, again, had far superior results versus any kind of allopathic medication. So it was like 24% versus 1 to 2% in terms of effectiveness. So we see that it works. First, that's one. Two, it's not expensive. That's important, too. That's why homeopathics were important in India, you know, because it didn't cost much. So it works, it is better, and people don't get sick. So, you know, that's one concept. The other concept that's very, very important is the argument between Louis Pasteur, okay, and several key doctors. His theory is one germ, one disease. And the other theory is the terrain is the answer. Build a strong terrain and you're not going to get sick. Okay. So we have Claude Bernard is one of those doctors. Now on his deathbed, Louis Pasteur admitted that they were right. It's the terrain, not the disease. That's big. Louis Pasteur is saying it's the terrain is more important. Get healthy. That's more important than a vaccine or, you know, that kind of thing. So it's a whole way of thinking that has been proven to be far more successful. Be healthy. And, you know, without getting into too much with the COVID vaccines, the research in Israel, since they did a lot of the COVID injections, is that the immune system gets suppressed. It can be effective for 6 weeks to about 8 months. Now they're pushing for more vaccines, but the problem is you have all these other things going on. And what they're finding is that people who end up getting sick again from this variant, that variant, are people who actually got the injection. And the unvaccinated are the people who are far healthier and are far less disease or hospitalizations. It varies. Some people say it's 70%. Some people say even 95% of the people in the hospitals are people who've been, quote, received the vaccine versus the people who haven't, who are healthier because they have built a broader immune system. So that's just kind of a rough idea. It's the same principle. Build the terrain, get healthy, eat good food. We do know people can, you know, vitamin D deficiency is somewhere between 75 and 95% in the U.S. People need vitamin D. They need zinc. They need immune-building herbs to build the terrain. plus a good healthy diet. Plus, obviously, a vegan with, you know, at least 80% likely diet. And you build the terrain and you have the greater resistance. So that's been the kind of argument since really the Civil War, believe it or not.
Right.
Not a new argument.
I mean, what you're saying is like really good news. You're saying that if we just focus on being healthy, and being healthy means all the things you're saying, a holistic approach, so having food that's alive and vegan, having positive thoughts, having a spiritual practice,
yes,
having healthy relationships, doing plenty of exercise, you know, all that. But why don't we hear about this? I mean, why didn't we hear about the homeopathic study in Brazil or these other protocols and other options that we have? It seems like people are just not getting this information at all.
Well, you don't have to be a genius to figure that question out, right? Because it's rhetorical. I know you know the answer. It's like, well, it doesn't make money.
Is that all it is? Is this basically
no.
It's just the money?
There's more to it. The intention that's been stated again and again is about depopulation. That's not a theory. That's not a conspiracy theory. That is what has been said now for quite a long time. So that's what's being in play, and that's what people have said is in play, you know, like the Bill Gates and different people. So we have levels of what this is about, you know. But I think they're being pretty out front about what the, I know Bill Gates has been very upfront about the intention. I remember when I was working in Nigeria, he had just started a whole thing with the polio injection. Lots of people were dying. Same thing happened in India. He's not allowed in India anymore because of what they did with. So the point I'm making is people are more sensitized when you get out of the mindset of the United States or the Western thing. People are really like very sensitized because they've seen it happen. They see their children die from the quote vaccines that are going to help them.
Right.
The HPV vaccine in India killed, I don't know, 70 girls or something like that. That's it, man. You're out of here. So he's not allowed back there. But he has made, and he's not the top of the thing, but I'm saying there's an intention. It really goes back really to part of even the 19th century. This is not a new thing.
Right. It's part of the, maybe part of the old, that eugenics movement, basically, to.
Maybe. It's definitely part of it. There's not a question. That's what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. I was trying to be gentle with it. That's all.
Right. Well, so what you're saying is that in other countries outside of sort of in the Western bubble, people in many cases are more conscious or more aware. And actually are more savvy about what's going on, and so they're not so gullible and not so easily fooled as people in the West. And I've noticed that, actually. It seems like sometimes it's the more educated people that are the most gullible. Does that seem true to you, or do you have...
Well, it's a way of life. When you're living off the earth, in Africa or places of Brazil, it's a way of life that makes much more sense to you because you're not that much removed. In the United States, even in Israel, you know, or Canada, we're a few more steps removed from the way of life. Mm-hmm. So it's harder to see the obvious.
That's the problem. So since we're removed from actually connecting with the food we're eating and being part of nature, we're much more dependent on other sources for our information. And so
right.
Much more vulnerable.
Wow. And we're more open to hearing sources that are based on real science.
Can you say a little bit about science? I mean, what do you think has been happening with science? I think this is a huge issue right now. And, you know, you yourself are not just an MD. You're also a researcher.
Yeah. So I've published papers in biochemistry, biophysics, school health. And there's a real protocol. And if you start to look at the amount of scientists and doctors who are speaking up now, because they are speaking up, they're pointing out that the science is not the science. It's just a propaganda tool. Wow. There is science. There is research. It does exist. Now, the other problem that's really hurt credibility is leading journals like The Lancet. They published a false research thing on hydroxychloroquine. They had to retract it. But how much credibility did they lose, you see? Same thing with the New England Medical Journal. They've published, they've had to retract because they've been pressured and pharmaceutical companies are paying for the advertisement. There's a huge compromise in promoting actual scientific results. And that is really hurt because you can't read a journal and trust it anymore. That's terrible. If you're counting on getting your information, you know, from the journals, then they're cheating. And they're getting caught cheating. It's like, whoa. So this is very bad for the scientific community to have this kind of going on.
Right, and that's what doctors rely on, right? I mean, they're proud of the fact that they rely on the best journals to get their information to treat people. So it's really a direct assault on the people. I mean, the fact that the science is being corrupted by the pharmaceutical industry, it's not just harming their reputation, it's actually harming human beings.
Yeah, and it makes it really hard to figure out what's going on.
Right.
You know, the doctor's like, what's, and you're looking, okay, now I have to actually read the research, see who did what, you know. And, you know, so something was quote to be, the vaccine was 95% effective. And when you really look at it, 0.2% effective.
Wow.
It just happened. Okay, but you have to have the eyes to see it. And it's a lot of work. It's a lot of extra work. Let me put it that way. That's why we do, you know, my approach is really simple. Do your organic, which I consider equally as important to veganic, okay, organic, veganic diet, because you've got to eat low, not only lower in the food chain, but you have to eliminate the pesticides, herbicides, and toxic chemicals that we're all accumulating, okay? Then organic, veganic, and then sleep is very important. What we find is that you miss a good night's sleep, two nights in a row, your blood sugar is going to go up. Your immune system is going to go down. Your neurotransmitters also get depressed. I mean, just a night or two. So, you know, sleep is a sleeper, so to speak. It's like, whoa, this is really serious. So we have to take good care of ourselves. And that brings us back to kind of the natural way of living. I just add this other piece to it, the natural way of living that supports the liberation process. Because when you're eating well and exercising and meditating, and I will just say something about meditation, they did a variety of research, but the bottom line is you've been meditating for 5 years or more, your physiology is 15 years younger.
Right. Yeah, I think that's true.
Whoa.
Yeah, it makes a huge difference.
It's you, and this research out of Harvard shows that people who are meditating actually and praying actually increase the brain mass in the frontal lobes and in the hippocampal areas. And so it's like, wait, you're now increasing your brain size. Normally, your brain shrinks 1% a year. You start meditating, just that one alone, besides eating, sleeping, and doing all the things we're talking about, right? And you're actually going to increase, you're going to decrease the shrinking of your brain, but I think we're also looking at increasing it. Some of the research is showing you literally increase critical brain areas like the frontal lobes, which is thinking, reasoning, and so forth, but the hippocampal area for memory. You know?
Right.
So all this is like, oh, wow. So we can make a big difference in terms of our thinking process and our anti-aging process because we're regenerating ourselves. That's huge. So the science is there now that supports what I'm just saying. There's enough research out there for that.
And so what you're talking about then is the connection between our body and our mind, that if our if our mind is at peace and if we're focused and concentrated and if we train and cultivate meditative awareness, that
yes.
our physical body improves, our mind improves, our body improves. So what do you, can you say something to everybody? So I think this is really an important question. What do you think about the protocols that have been rolled out to keep people healthy during COVID? For example, wearing masks and social distancing and not having a job anymore.
Well, you're asking more of a science question. It's not what I think. It's not my opinion.
Good, yeah.
There's been over 24 studies that show that lockdowns don't work for protection against COVID. They do work for increasing the rate of suicide tenfold. They do work for making people depressed. I'll tell you that. That does work. But in terms of prevention, there's no research that shows that. I said over 24 studies. In terms of masks, same thing. Well, except they have a negative effect. Now, here's where the negative effect is with the mask. Two things. You decrease your oxygenation, and some studies are showing with kids that are wearing masks, there's a 3% reduction in oxygen, so their brain development is negatively affected. That's really serious, okay? So the kids should not be wearing masks, and kids do not transmit, but they don't really get sick. If you're less than 18, your chance of dying from COVID is, you know, 0.999998. It's very little. Like, more likely you could be hit by lightning. Okay, literally. I'm not meaning as a metaphor. Okay, so masks also create gum infections. With the gum infections, you also increase the rate of pneumonia. So masks can be detrimental. They have been proven clearly not working. I think it was in Norway, or it was in Denmark. There was a study with thousands of people, and they showed masks made no difference. The CDC has at least 8 studies, at least, show masks don't make any difference. So social distancing is actually destructive for the development of kids, because kids depend on social interaction. But for adults, you're taking, again, 10 times more suicide. How is that a good thing? So, and it doesn't work. So if something doesn't work in a positive way and it works negatively to increase suicide and depression, that obviously doesn't make sense. And wearing masks, clearly proven not to work, but it does increase gum infections and increasing bacterial pneumonias from the masks. So these are things that, again, that's straight science. There's enough, even by the institutions that are pushing it. So mm-hmm. if the CDC is pushing with their own research shows it doesn't work, you pushing wearing masks, then you at least, the research is probably pretty valid that they don't work, if that makes
wow.
sense.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. And I really appreciate your bringing in those scientific studies about mask wearing, about social distancing and lockdowns. So it seems like really obvious that those are counterproductive, but we're being told that they're better. Would you say the same thing is true of the vaccines, that they're more of a risk than of a help for most people?
Well, there's a study that came out in 26 different countries. Mm-hmm. You know, the graph of how people are doing. And what it was in 26 out of 26 countries, after they received the injection, there was an increase in the rate of COVID. Speaks for itself. I have the study.
Right. I noticed that in India. As soon as they started rolling out the vaccines, all of a sudden they had this huge spike in cases. And I think, yeah, that's interesting. Probably in a lot of countries.
26 out of 26. I didn't say a lot. I said 26 out of 26. That's 100%. Okay. And that's just on paper. I mean, that's what they're showing.
Wow.
So it's my opinion. That's just the research that's out there.
You know, we could talk a lot longer, but I think in interest of the context that we have here, we're going to have to kind of bring this to a close pretty soon. Is there any final thoughts you'd like to share with everyone who's watching and listening? Because, you know, you are, to me, a fountain of very important, helpful, not only scientific information, but spiritual and life, wisdom information. So you could just say maybe some closing thoughts and also how people can be in touch with you to learn more and to
stay
in touch. That'd be great.
I can talk for a long time, so it's real easy. But I just want to mention environmentally, I don't want to ignore that. We know that a vegan lifestyle conserves enormous amounts of water, a swimming pool difference of water each year. Okay, that's huge. It conserves a lot of land productivity in a big way. So the environmental is important too. I was just kind of making that point, that it has an environmental. So when you add it up physically, emotionally, mentally for the individual and spiritually, and then how it protects the environment and the living planet, we see that this is the medicine for now, for healing the planet in the future, now and the future. And it's that simple, profound. And I just add one more thing that I like to talk about for people is that it's a way of eating where we create a level of sacredness in our life. And so it's like, well, we're not just eating. We're actually creating a sacredness in the act of eating that's uplifting the planet on all these different levels. And so that's how I like to think about the eating process. It's like, well, I'm eating vegan, my food is fine. This is healing the planet, healing myself, and deepening my connection with the divine. So that's what the sacrament of eating your food, when we're doing organic, veganic, at least, up to 80% of my food is this. This is a sacrament, a sacredness approach to eating. So that's the final kind of thought that I'd like to share. It's like, this is way beyond, getting stronger, your mind working better. It's a whole way of life that brings sacredness to the living planet and to humanity. Now, people can reach me, and that's how I think about it. I mean, that is really that important to me, if you get what I'm saying. It's like, okay, I'm doing this because I love it. It makes me feel good. Yeah, I get stronger, but I'm bringing sacredness and holiness to the living planet. So it's like, wow, that's just a turn on. That's how I look at it. People can reach me at drcousins.com. And then that can take you to, we have a kind of support community. It's treeoflife.mn.co. But drcousins.com, that's pretty easy to remember. And that takes you wherever you need to go. And then we have a newsletter and we have information. I also have a regular Thursday evening program, one for spiritual nutrition, and then one for what I call Alive and Liberated with Dr. Gabriel. We, that's you and I and our circle, have really been uplifting the planet through our life, through what we're doing. And so I want to bless you for all the good work that you have been doing over the years. Okay? Wow. Yeah. And so I want to honor you for that. And there's somebody that's part of that. So it's great. So, and I want to bless all the listeners for being wise enough to listen to you and tune into what I have to say too.
All right. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Gabriel Cousins, for shining the light of wisdom with us during the summit. We really appreciate it. And we wish you all the best, and may we all live a life of sacred harmony with all living beings. Thanks very much,
great.
Everyone. Thanks for joining us. Peace be with you.
Thank you.